see Zendaya like you've never seen her before.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challengers, where Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy who makes no apologies for her game on and off the court.
For more than a decade, she has had former best friends Patrick and Art, played by Josh O'Connor and Mike Feist, under her spell.
It's Tashi's game and Tashi's rules.
See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com. Are you tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card?
Well, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night.
Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime.
So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve.
Limitations apply.
See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Her only personality trait is being insecure, quote right. unquote.
Men love that. Well, I know that because of One Direction. It's like, you're insecure. Don't know what for.
But right? Is that where she learned it? Like we her and I both grew up in the era of One Direction. Is that just like what we've been conditioned to be insecure about?
Here's the funny thing. I feel like I learned from One Direction and previous messaging that existed prior to One Direction that it was like kind of enough to be insecure, but the thing is you also have to be insanely hot.
Welcome to Here to Make Friends, a HuffPost podcast about the Bachelor franchise, where we lovingly snark on the Bachelor and Bachelor adjacent shows.
Whether you love the Bachelor or love to hate it, we're here to break down every single delicious moment with you.
I'm Emma Gray.
And I'm Claire Fallon.
This week on The Bachelor, you know, the varsity ladies, they only know how to do one thing: deny, attack, and reverse victim and offender.
This episode may find a second life as a training video for teachers to recognize bullying dynamics in middle school and high schools. And, you know, just in time for Black History Month, we get a masterclass in weaponized white fragility.
It was quite a week. I mean, Matt's love journey was essentially on the back burner while he played whack-a-mole with all the house bullies, so I guess that's what we'll be doing as well.
And here to unpack all of the truly distressing scenes with us is content creator, YouTuber, and just general woman about town, but in her home during COVID, Alexa Losey.
Hi, and there's Ruth. So if you guys hear a cat in the back, that is my new kitten.
Extremely cute. Aww.
She would be in the bedroom if I had walls, but I live in like a work-live loft, so we don't have walls here, which means she just does whatever she wants.
Yeah. A fun thing about female cats is they're more vocal than male cats, which I've learned can be very distracting during the day.
And she's also a Siamese, which just like brings it up another level. Oh, so we're just
talking
all day.
She's channeling her namesake's energy, RBG.
Oh, she really is.
Yeah.
Well, we look forward to both ghosts of you joining us today. I hope that Ruth has some thoughts prepared on the spectacle we saw last night, which, I mean, they start us off with another of these like cold open clips, which I hate more and more. This one, we get a preview that Victoria will be upset at a rose ceremony. Fine. But let's take it back a little bit. We see Victoria and Kit kind of walking through the grounds. This is like a new genre of footage from these seasons where they're on these resort properties where you just see them kind of roaming the grounds. You never used to like really see them outside of their common room area in between dates.
I kind of like it. I'm like, it's nice that they get to like get out, have
they get
a coffee,
some exercise.
Go on a walk, go on a jog. Like it looks much more pleasant than being stuck in the Bachelor Mansion, honestly.
Yeah, it feels very like we're having our morning walk at the sanitarium or something.
Exactly.
Sanitarium.
To bring it back to Victorian times.
Victorian times. Love it.
It is Victorian times. Victoria and Kit are walking together. And like, it's hard to tell with the editing. It's a distanced shot. We're getting some dialogue between the two of them. It's... who knows if it's exactly from this moment, but we hear them talking about how Victoria just loves the OGs, which is hilarious considering how awful she was to them before a new enemy showed up. She's like, oh, I just love the OGs. It's just been hard since the new girls came. They pass Ryan and Brittany walking the other direction. And when the passage has occurred, we hear Victoria saying, oh, they're so annoying. She's so disgusting. Ugh, like, just gross. So again, we don't know for sure if that happened in this moment, but it's certainly the case that these things were said, and Ryan and Brittany are also testifying to the fact that they have been being bullied. Like, they're hearing a lot of nasty comments from some of the women who are in the house before they arrived. We also get, like, a scene where MJ, who has done a full heel turn, is reassuring Anna, like, you did the right thing by saying something about Brittany. Like, don't even worry about how you accused some poor woman of being a sex worker without any real evidence and for no good reason on national television. I, like, the way this whole episode was engineered, like, what did you guys think about it? I felt like the vibe and, like, the editing choices, like, everything felt so different from a standard Bachelor episode. Like, it felt like a different genre.
The editing was really wild. Like, they skipped back and forth between times of day. There were definitely a lot of Frankenbites that I kind of picked up on. Although I do believe that, like, the general bullying vibe, it was a very real thing. But it was, like, the cuts were kind of confusing. It felt like, again, we're getting so much focus on the handful of white women who are behaving worst. And that is coming at the expense of, like, any characters that we can kind of attach ourselves to as viewers and feel excited about. I'm like, oh, right, Matt's allegedly dating, but this is not, like, it doesn't feel like a dating show.
No. Not at all. It felt like, it really felt like an influencer event gone extremely wrong. Like, I forgot that they were there for love. The entire time, I was like, this just feels like Lord of the Flies. This feels like a train wreck.
Yeah, it does.
Like,
feel...
it literally, like, you're watching this and, like, this doesn't even feel like TV. Like, it gave me the ick. Just
yeah,
wasn't
I think,
into it.
I think
it
ick
felt
is,
like
is
a sort
great...
of, like, satirical, like, dystopian horror movie set at an influencer conference. Like, completely. There's, like, a sense of... foreboding that just pervaded every action. We see them all, like, we're pre-rose ceremony at this point because there was a cliffhanger last episode, and we see the women, like, applying their makeup and doing hair, but, like, the music cues and the expressions and the women in the shots that we see, it just feels very ominous in a way that even on the show, when they're trying to do ominous, it was darker than that. Like, they're taking it another level. Like, they're gonna get there and it's gonna be Thunderdome, or, like, someone's gonna poison everyone. Like, there's something off.
I also like that they tried to kind of set it up. You know, they get to the cocktail party and they sort of have the main kind of villains of this section, Anna and Victoria, being like, you know, I feel so much better, things are just gonna go well for me, like, I was worried, but now things are calming down and we're just going to, like, have a nice time with Matt. And Matt walks in and is like, I am here to shut this shit down. He basically, you know, addresses what Katie had told him before and says, I hear there's a mob mentality. I hear there's been a culture of bullying. I hear someone is spreading rumors that could ruin someone's life. And then he says, quote, if you have to belittle someone else for you to shine, those aren't the qualities I'm looking for in my wife. And I really was glad that he said that and that he was super clear. And he immediately pulls Brittany, and Anna, you just see her face fall. She's like, I'm screwed. I've been told on. I'm, like, fucked.
I really felt for Matt in this moment, like, the exhaustion of being like, again, like, Sisyphus, like, I keep trying to fall in love. A lot of women, they're all hot. I could probably fall in love with basically any of them, but they just keep giving me new things to deal with that aren't falling in love with women. And, like, I just want to break. Like, Jesus Christ. And, I mean, he would never say that because he's a man of God. But he has to basically spend this episode ferreting out all of the bullies in the house and getting rid of them so that he can just have a little time to relax.
He's like a high school guidance counselor sort of vibe, where he's like, you're not a bad person, but I think you need some space away from this situation. Like, you need to be removed. Like, he's like a disciplinarian, like some tough love. And he's like, and then he's like, I'm just trying to like make out. And yet here we are.
He's your high school guidance counselor who wants to make out.
Who wants to make out.
It's so crazy though, because I feel like he's the only bachelor that has done like very bachelorette things in that way. Like, I feel like every episode of The Bachelorette, like she's having to facilitate all of this drama, when it's like there's been no other bachelor that's really done that. And he's kind of just taken charge, which is making him one of my more favorite bachelors.
It's true. Like, I feel like so often, and I'm surprised, because there were points early in the season when I felt like his inexperience with the show was telling. He didn't know when Victoria and Marilyn were in conflict, how to handle it. I think made a bad decision, but possibly producer driven. But he's really stepped up in a way that you typically would see the guy be like, well, you said this and you said that. I think you're both hot. So like, who can say? Why don't you both just stick around? And instead he's like, you know, I heard you were bullying and you got to go. Like, that's it. That's the situation. I heard someone else is bullying. She's also got to go. Like, no tolerance for that. And I was really impressed, actually.
Me too. It was refreshing to just see someone kind of take some decisive action and not do the thing that we saw a lot from like Colton and Peter, where it was like, I must investigate. And by investigate, I mean just hear two women say some things and be like, who could make a judgment based on the information I have? Like, Matt seemed to actually take information in, see that women were clearly hurt, and like privileged that. Like, the obvious hurt held more weight, which was nice to see.
And I wonder, I don't know if Matt knew that Victoria was up to shenanigans with Marilyn, and he was just like, they want me to keep Victoria for drama and like whatever, I will. Or if he has given her like one chance and then was like, this is happening again. Like, it's not looking so good for Victoria anymore. But either way, he's definitely stepping up. He sits down with Brittany and he's like, what's going on? And she's already crying. And I think gives a very generous to Anna description of what happened, which is Anna came up to me to apologize and said that she was telling everyone in the house that Brittany was an escort. And I want to say, from what we saw, it didn't seem like Anna apologized until Brittany was like, excuse me, you were saying what? And then Anna was like, oh, right, yes. I guess when you say it that way, it does sound bad and I shouldn't have said that. And meanwhile, MJ and Anna are kind of scheming a little bit. Anna's very nervous. She knows she's in trouble. MJ's like, listen, it's fine. We need to make Matt feel better. It's not a toxic environment in the house at all. You just need to go talk to him, smooth this over. It's going to be fine. And so Matt heads off to talk to Anna. And Anna decides to just like lay it all out, apologize, hope for the best.
So I thought that Anna actually handled this the best of any of the women who were kind of confronted about their bad behavior during this episode. I mean, the bar is super low, so I'm not trying to give like any gold stars here, but at least Anna sat down with Matt and immediately was like, I did something that was not okay. She does kind of like downplay it and call it an offhand comment, which like, was it really an offhand comment?
I want to quote what she says, because she is the only person to apologize instead of lying, I think.
She takes some accountability. She's the only person to like really cop to what happened.
But what she says was, I'm so sad and upset with myself. Before coming, I received messages about another girl who would be here, Brittany. And when I saw her, she says, the worst thing I could say was said. By whom, Anna? Who said it? It was said it by was just someone. Said. I have very rarely seen passive voice doing so much work in an apology. And then she's like, oh, I immediately felt horrible about it and completely apologized for it, which is like putting a very generous gloss on what she did. And then she's like, I feel so bad, I'm breaking out in a rash.
I mean, again, no gold stars, but at least she admitted that she said the thing, like, somewhat. At least she didn't say, that's a lie, and Brittany is a bad person. And, you know, she took some accountability and then, like, accepted the consequences, which was Matt sending her home. He's like, look, you're not a horrible person. He's like, we've all said things that we wanted to take back.
Or laughed about things that we wish we hadn't laughed about, right, Matt?
I know. Ironic timing, given everything that has come out about, you know, Matt and his friends making fun of Victoria's body. But we digress. And he's like, I've had to take the responsibility for things that I've said that have been shitty. And I have to take responsibility for the women who are here. And I can't see you being a part of this journey anymore. And I think, like, that was the right thing for him to do. And he kind of just walks her out. And that's it for Anna. Goodbye.
This also made me so infuriated. I don't know if you guys had covered this, but my batch chat group, it's all people that have, like, very much been in other cities and, like, kind of get the scene of it. They kind of, like, this one girl was like, no, I remember I used to go to this nightclub all the time, and Anna was the bottle girl of, like, a very, like, clubby club. And so my theory is Brittany used to go to that club at Big Spender's Tables, and Anna got kind of sick of seeing Brittany there all the time, that she just kind of made up this rumor.
That's, I feel like there's definitely something going on in the Chicago scene that, like,
yeah,
I have no access to, but I did see the photos that Anna was working as a bottle girl, and I feel like there was some implication that Anna had that was like she wasn't part of that crew of women, like she wasn't working as a bottle girl, but she was like around with rich men. So it sounds like something like that for sure. But
yeah, so somebody from the Chicago scene, whatever, was kind of like filling everybody in and was saying that like Anna was at the club that's kind of notorious for like escorts going to with guys. And so she just, I feel like, was in the mix of those people. And then there was someone that probably said an offhanded random rumor that she then brought into the entire show.
Right. Just, totally. Just like, there's totally nothing wrong with being a bottle girl or not being an escort.
Or being, like, an escort.
What a no. gross thing to, like, bring into this conversation on national television. And the way that she keeps acting like this was out of character and weird and random, when she clearly took a lot of glee in saying it on multiple mm-hmm. occasions that were filmed, like, that, it still upsets me. Like, I'm glad that she owned up to it and apologized, but, yeah. like, I don't think that she really copped, and understandably, I don't think she really copped to how strategic and joyful it was that she spread this rumor.
Yeah, very, very, very weird.
But yeah. One down, and I am glad. We then cut back to the main sitting room, and I found this interesting. Chelsea's kind of, like, asking the newer women. She's like, bullying's a really strong word. Like, I don't really think the house is toxic. Do you? And they're all like, yes.
Yes, definitely. They're like, yes.
Michelle's like, yeah, people have been super disrespectful. And, like, other people have, like, laughed at these really disrespectful comments. And it's not okay. And Catalina's like, yeah, it really sucks. And suddenly, I think all of the women are like, shit, we've been complicit. Yeah, and they definitely go on an apology tour.
Anna, they saw Anna being walked out. So they're like, okay, time to care about this.
It feels like a bunch of first graders.
Oh, yeah. It was just kind of embarrassing. Like, you know, there are some women who we don't know the extent of everyone's involvement in the bullying. Like, there are women that we saw making comments or laughing, but, like, we don't really know for sure about everyone. So, like, you see Serena, I think Serena P apologizing for being completely oblivious. We're not really equipped to say whether she was oblivious or participating. But when Kit apologizes for not being more open, I'm like, I feel like you were more than not open. And Ryan is like, you know, everyone's apologizing all of a sudden, but why would we really believe that anyone is being sincere? Because they've been okay with it for days now. And now that Matt's cracking down, they're trying to make up.
And then we see Victoria attempt an apology tour, which we just know is, like, absurd. Absolutely absurd.
It's hilarious the things she has to apologize for.
She's like, when I just stole your crown days ago that I did not apologize for before, it wasn't malicious. It was just, like, good fun. This is Victoria's move. She's like, she's extremely cruel. And then she's like, none of that was serious. It's just how I have a good time. And you should all be aware of how casual and not serious my cruelty is. And that's on you.
Yeah, like she goes around basically being like, I would have warmed up to you, but like, I don't think you were treated fairly. I wanted you to know that. I'm basically on your side. Like, no one believes you, Victoria.
Like, ma'am, you literally spearheaded this campaign.
It's this move of like, well, I was just having fun as almost a threat. Like, if you don't agree that we were just being playful, then like, I'm going to do it again. Like, it's not a very good apology.
So weird. Literally worst villain of all time.
It's just, it's exhausting. So, Matt. Like,
don't you miss Corinne?
I don't, no. You know what? I don't miss Corinne.
I don't miss Corinne either.
Really sucked.
But like.
It's amazing how they keep scraping the bottom.
I'm like, who else was a fun villain? Because Corinne definitely isn't. Who's somebody that was just like a lighthearted villain?
Yeah, I mean, there have been some more fun villains, but I feel like they become less memorable as villains. Often they're like kind of absorbed into other franchise like seasons roles. And roles, and you kind of forget that they were a villain at all. I don't know if that's going to happen with Victoria, but
oh no,
Matt asks Ryan what she thinks about Squint. He's like making the tour of the new women now. He's like, tell me what you've been experiencing. And Ryan says, well, the main problem has been Victoria. She's constantly making comments. On my first group date, she toasted to the OGs, like being exclusionary. And because I'm a dancer, she called me a hoe. Oof. And Ryan gets very upset about this. Like, she's very emotional about this word having been used about her. And she's like, she just apologized to me in the hallway, but I don't think it was sincere. Which, like, no shit. No. So this kind of seems to seal, or at least as it's presented to us, seals Victoria's fate.
Yeah, I think Matt's kind of done when he hears that. I mean, it's just such a juvenile insult. It's such like a basic gendered, like, she's really like scraping
and racialized, the I feel like.
Like, and right, yeah. And racialized. Like, I think that Victoria seems to have this like specific obsession with painting herself a white woman as like inherently classy, and all of these other women she has pretty much only gone after, or primarily gone after, women of color. Yeah. And painting them as, you know, trashy or slutty or hoes, quote unquote. And that like 100% has a racial angle to it, and it's really disgusting. And I'm glad Definitely. That Matt was like, this is done.
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah. So Matt does decide to talk to Victoria. But first, Victoria goes up to Ryan and asks what they talked about. And Ryan's like, well, I did tell him about the toast you made on our group date. And this is when Victoria's like, oh, but I'm always playful. I'm never malicious. And that saying that to Matt makes your actions towards me look really fake. And Ryan's like, well, I'm not always nice, but I'm not fake. And mid-sentence, Victoria just walks away, which, like, it's such a minor thing, but the level of just, like, as if she doesn't see Ryan as a person that she's talking to. So this seems to be the beginning of Victoria's breaking point. She thought tonight was going to be a good night for her. It's turning the other way. She goes to talk to Matt.
But first she like clearly talks to a producer, and yeah. She's like, the girls, they're fake as shit. They're not his wives. Like, my good outshines the shit in the house. Like, she's just losing her mind. She's devolving.
And she sits down with Matt and tries to put herself on the good side of things. She's like, I loved what you said about the culture in the house and how seriously you're taking it. And he's like, thank you.
He's like, well, speaking of that,
yeah. And she's like, well, Ryan told me she was upset about the toast, so I know there are things I can work on, which is good, you know, to admit to these things and to be like, I'm part of the solution. She was really making a play for it. And Matt's like, well, that's why when Katie brought this to my attention,
snitch, Matt, you know better than to be a goddamn snitch.
Yeah. this, no one knew it was Katie until this point. I am wondering if Victoria told anyone before leaving the house. We haven't seen whether that happened or not yet. But he's like, you know, Ryan's very upset. And words are powerful. You called her a hoe. And Victoria says, well, that was taken completely out of context.
And this was my favorite Matt line. He was like, I'm just curious what context would calling somebody a hoe be acceptable? And she just seems like flummoxed by this. I mean, maybe they cut away and she did, in fact, respond. But it was just like,
but like,
what could you possibly say to that?
And this was a scene where I was like, I guess, and I'm like constantly like, this is so bad. Could this have been cut together in a weird way? But like, he explicitly, with his comment, demonstrates that she was saying that the hoe comment was taken out of context, and that was her defense. Just like, so he ends this conversation without sending her home, but it's not looking good for her. And Victoria can tell. She feels it coming. She's in her in the moment. She's like, am I missing something? I make the house toxic. That's completely crazy. You know, I don't ever want to be called a bully or toxic. This was a big thing this episode, is the white women who are bullying being like, do not call me that. I don't ever want to be called that.
It really felt like the defense that white people use, where they're like, the worst thing you could do to me is call me a racist. They're like, the racism is not the worst thing, but calling me or my actions racist is the worst thing. And that's what it felt like. It was like, the actual bullying and harm isn't the worst thing, but to call me a bully, nothing has ever, like, there's no greater pain you could inflict on a person.
Right. It's not even like, I don't want to be a bully.
No, you just can't be called that. Mm-hmm. How dare you, Claire? How dare you?
That's wild.
I'm speaking to the manager of this establishment.
What did you guys think about how we see Victoria's progression through the rest of the night? Because we see her in some in the moments. We see her, you know, Matt calls an end to the cocktail party early to prepare for the rose ceremony. We see Victoria, like, go to the ladies' room. We see her sit outside. She appears to be talking to a producer throughout all of this. She's saying, like, it's not funny anymore. I'm getting feelings invested. That was a really hard conversation. And now that I'm taking it seriously to be his wife, it's frustrating.
Also, she says there's no, literally, there's no one in the house he can marry besides me. I'm literally the best option for him.
She also says Ryan is the shadiest bitch. So, like, she's just, like, not learned her lesson.
I can't tell. Like, is this before or after she talks to Matt? I mean, it appears to be after, but it's, like, a very weird way to respond. And it also seems like the women inside can actually hear the really rude things she's saying about them. Like, she says, I'm the only one with a working brain in there. I'm not even being rude. I'm like, that's a very rude thing to say.
But she's not being rude. Like, she seems to think rude means insincere. Like, she's like, it's not rude. I just actually think that.
it's just my very earnest opinion.
The things that she's saying felt odd to include. Like, some of them felt, you know, drama. But they intentionally included her saying to a producer, like, it's not funny anymore. And now I'm taking it seriously to be his wife. So it seems like they're trying to sort of set her up as, like, she didn't come here for the right reasons. Not saying that she did come for the right reasons, but they're, like, leaking her, sort of heavily implying that she was originally there to, like, stir shit
up. It did feel like one of those conversations that, like, probably happened. I mean, not to this extent or this level of delusion, but I'm sure there are a lot of, like, you know, very frustrated conversations that happen with producers throughout, and they usually aren't shown. And so when they are shown, they're like, they feel especially telling. And it was just like, oh man. I mean, I'm sure a lot of, like, some of this stuff was Franken bitten together, but in totality, it doesn't paint a good picture. And it's like, even if half of this stuff was completely taken out of context, her behavior was still appalling.
Well, it's like, right? the whole situation.
Right.
Like, can you say Ryan is the shadiest bitch or Ryan is a hoe and have that be validated by context? Like, I personally don't really think so.
No.
Especially given what we have also seen about the way that she treats women directly in front of her in context. So she knows that things are not going well. She's like hyperventilating. She's like, I'm going to throw up.
And then it is rose ceremony time, finally. Yes. And yet we're only halfway through this episode.
So three women have roses. There were 20 women at the start of the night. Now Anna's gone home. There are 19. So there are going to be 15 women at the end of this rose ceremony.
I'm so glad we're like just start. They need to cull the crowd.
They're so far into the season, and there's still so many women. Like when Alex Michelle was the Bachelor, there were basically like two women left at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
And look how well that worked out.
Make those cuts. Keep making those cuts.
And we do see some footage of Victoria that like brings to mind the thought that like she does seem to be like suffering in some way, that she's lashing out. We see her, you know, saying like, "Oh, I'm kind-hearted. I'm honest. I'm genuine. I'm hardworking. I'm fun. I'm loyal. I'm like the most loyal." And like, I was clear and concise in my communications to him. Like, she's like listing her like resume, but she seems to know on some level that it's not really true.
I hope she has a good therapist because there's some like pain that needs to be unpacked there.
So the roses go to Brittany, Ryan, Rachel, Serena P, Maggie, Kit, MJ, Katie, Jasenia, Abigail, Chelsea, and Serena C. And this means that Victoria is going home, thank God, and also Mari, Catalina, and Lauren. So the other three women come up and do their traditional hug goodbye, you know, good luck on your journey to love, nice to meet you. Victoria walks up and just sort of like confronts him. She's like, I honestly feel so sorry for you that you would listen to hearsay and not all of the facts behind a situation. And he's completely nonplussed by this. So he just kind of stares at her until she's like, goodbye, and leaves. I mean, how do you respond to that? Like, that's technically what happened. I guess you could consider it hearsay, but I mean, in that sense, so is whatever Victoria said. He wasn't present for the situation. And I don't see why he would believe her. Or litigate this at the rose ceremony.
No, he's like, you are gone. We are done. And Victoria, she really, again, no self-reflection, no like sobering moment like Anna of like, I'm really disappointed in myself. It's just like, wow, I feel sorry for Matt and all the other women must be bereft because I brought all the joy into the house. And like, everyone seems okay. I'm just going to say it. Like, these women seem to be fine without Victoria.
There's a part of, like, she acted so badly. And, like, the way that she treated, especially, like, the women of color that she zeroed in on was so awful. And I absolutely do not want to, like, justify or belittle or excuse that in any way. But those comments like that, like, I would be very surprised if the girls are okay that I left. The whole house is going to feel like shit. I brought so many people joy. Like, to me, that is a comment that, like, derives from a very deep sense of insecurity that people don't like her.
100%.
Which they probably don't because she was so awful to them. And, yeah, it's just sad. So, everyone's fine. They toast. Fresh page.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, we'll have more with Alexa Losi.
Nuuly is a subscription clothing rental service that's all about helping you have fun and get creative with your style.
There's dressy stuff, trendy going out clothes, casual tops, and premium jeans. I mean, you name it, and Nuuly has it.
For just $98 a month, you get your choice of any six styles each month, access to thousands of styles from more than 400 brands with inclusive sizing.
Fast, free shipping and returns and professional cleaning in Nuuly's state-of-the-art laundering facility are also included.
Plus the option to buy what you love. I love Nuuly so much. I actually have bought several items that I found through Nuuly, and they are staples in my wardrobe. Most recently, I've been looking for the perfect pair of jeans, which is a constant quest because my body is always changing and also jean styles are always changing. I was trying out this month the A Goldie pinch waist jeans, which are sort of legendary for how flattering they are. And it was exciting to get to try them out without sending $200 of my dollars away.
Nuuly is a great value at $98 a month for any 6 styles. But right now you can get $20 off your first month of Nuuly when you sign up with the code LTSI20.
Just go to NUULY.com. That's Nuuly with 2 U's and enter the code LTSI20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month.
That's NUULY.com, Nuuly with 2 U's, with code LTSI20.
Nuuly subscription clothing rental. Change your clothes.
Okay, so you got engaged. Congrats. Now you may be wondering what comes next.
If you're planning a wedding, the first thing you need to know about is Zola.
With Zola, you can plan your entire wedding in one convenient place. From the day you get engaged and search for the venue to the day you send out your save the dates, make your registry, and even taste your cake.
Zola has literally everything you need to make the whole process super easy and actually even enjoyable.
There's even a 5-star app that helps you plan on the go or, you know, from your couch, which is certainly how, if I was planning a wedding, I would definitely want to do it as loungily as possible.
So important.
I also just know myself. I know that planning any kind of event, like even a birthday party, can get very stressful. And so it's been really cool to see friends use Zola. It really seems to make everything a lot less stressful. And as a frequent wedding attender, I love to be able to hop on that Zola registry and just purchase a gift. Easy peasy. I know I've done it. I won't forget. Thank you, Zola.
Yeah, everything's all in the same place. It's perfect. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals.
Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
And you can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week.
Eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Just heat and savor the good stuff.
Plus, you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. And you can pause or reschedule your deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
They're celebrating Earth Day all month long at Factor. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals.
Especially since I've been back from my travels, I've gotten really out of practice with my normal meal prep. And so Factor has been really helping me kind of bridge that gap, know that I have healthy, whole meals in my fridge ready to eat when I need them.
Head to factormeals.com/LTSI50 and use code LTSI50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month.
That's code LTSI50 at factormeals.com/LTSI50. 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Anyone who's been listening to this podcast for a while, or even not that long, knows that we love Article. I mean, honestly, I'm looking around my home right now. Coffee tables from Article. That lovely chair out on my deck, Article. Our big console, Article. My bed frame, Article. This is an Article household.
It is. And it was an inspiration to me. We finally got our first Article piece of furniture recently, our new couch. And my husband and I are both constantly just like, how did we live before this couch? This is such an improvement over what we had before. It's so comfortable. It just seems to get more comfortable every day. I mean, it's the couch you dream of.
And the reason that we have both been able to find ideal furniture on Article is because Article believes in delightful design for every home.
And thanks to their online-only model, they have some really delightful prices, too.
Their curated assortment of mid-century modern, coastal, industrial, Scandi, and boho designs makes furniture shopping simple.
And their team of designers are all about finding that perfect balance between style, quality, and price, because we all want the best of all of those three things united in one piece of furniture, right?
Plus, they're dedicated to thoughtful craftsmanship that stands the test of time and, you know, looks good doing it.
Article is offering our listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
To claim, visit article.com/LTSI, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout.
That's article.com/LTSI for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Let me set the scene. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at actually unbeatable prices.
I love it.
Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach.
Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry.
The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. We truly love to see it.
By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes.
I love Quince, and I actually have a couple recent Quince purchases that I'm really excited about. I just ordered the Glow Boho hoops to have like kind of a chunkier version of my usual gold hoops to wear, like maybe on a date night or something. And they are beautiful. They're everything I dreamed of.
Indulge in affordable luxury.
Go to quince.com/LTSI for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's quince.com/LTSI to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
quince.com/LTSI.
And now back to the show.
The next day, the dates begin. Rachel gets the first one-on-one. Rachel, our fairy tale begins today. And that means that Rachel is getting the big Pretty Woman style Cinderella date of the season. It's a chance for Matt to wear another sort of earth tone chore coat and turtleneck set, which is his
signature look.
And so they have, I don't know if this is like a real boutique that exists on the grounds of Nima Colin, which
honestly it probably does. These like high-end resorts do tend to have like entire overpriced boutiques on them.
Wild.
But these dresses are weird. Like I've never seen them before. And I work very fashion adjacent, and I was like, I don't know where these came from.
No, but don't you feel like they might be like, because they didn't say the brand, like normally they would be like, Revolve has supplied whatever, you know, like, but it made me feel like it was one of those like just overpriced pseudo designer things that like exist only on high end resorts. Like there's 100%. Like a whole like cottage industry of these places.
1000%.
Yeah. I completely agree.
And then
think
the red bottoms.
Yeah, it's you're staying at Nima Colin and you forgot to get a gown for the black tie dinner that you're going to at the restaurant. I liked some of them. I liked the one that Matt loved, but I didn't really know where it'd be practical to wear, which is like a gauzy, ruched mini dress with shoulder capes.
And I was like, that was pretty cute.
Maybe I'd wear it in a music video or something. I don't know. Maybe get into music videos.
I mean, on TV. Like, it's a great
dramatic look.
TV-specific dramatic look. I mean, she looked beautiful in all of them. These dates are always so odd because there's, like, very little conversation or, like, actual interaction between the lead and the fairy princess at the center. And there's like such a, it's just like such a bizarre vibe. Like I always have two feelings about it. Like on the one hand, I'm like, I hate this. It's such like a weird infantilizing, like gross idea that like what makes a good relationship is a man just like bestowing a lot of material goods on a woman, and like that's what being loved is. Like, it just gives, it's obviously, the messaging is incredibly problematic. On the other hand, I'm like, God, it's like the best prize for being on this show is to get one of these dumb dates, and then you like whether or not you leave with love, you like leave with a bunch of free clothes. Like, you, I leave, like, with free Louboutins. Clothes. Yeah, like I would take some free Louboutins, you know? So these are my conflicting feels.
Oh, totally. I would rather, I feel like when it's the men who get a date like this, it feels more comfortable, because I'm like, yeah, that'd be nice to get some free stuff. And there isn't this weird sort of history of, you know, older men or whatever, like wealthier men, like showering the nubile woman with.
Right.
And, oh, I'm spoiling you today, which, like, ooh. There are a lot of comments like that. Of course, it's the paradigm. You know, she's like, oh, I've never been treated like an actual princess like this before. Which I guess just means like having a man buy her a ton of couture. Like, it's funny too, like they do these Cinderella dates and it's always like these bougie women who clearly are like influencers and live very comfortable lifestyles. And they're like, oh, finally, I'm being spoiled. I'm like, what do you mean? You seem like you're doing pretty well most of the time. She gets the Louboutins to top off her dress, and she weeps. She's like, I've never had a pair of shoes over $40 on my feet, which, like, what?
Claire, I'm sure, like, that's not true. Claire was like, that's a lie. That's a lie.
Is this a Payless ad? Like, she's like, oh yeah, I'm like an influencer and I wear only $25 shoes. Come on.
I know. I was like, look, even DSW heels cost more than $40.
Was she an influencer prior to the show?
Maybe not.
But I, like, don't know. She's like 22. So like,
I've only glanced at her social media a little bit, but it has the influencer look. And so,
okay. Yeah. To me, Alexa, like, she doesn't look. You like know.
It's not the look of like, I'm from a hardscrabble background and I've clawed my way up to be on The Bachelor. It's, you know, she always well has cute curated. Outfits, well curated,
yeah.
Shiny hair.
Just shiny
good
hair.
For her, really. I always notice shininess of hair because mine is naturally not shiny at all. And I realize some people do have that naturally, but I digress. So they have this date where their main interaction seems to be him being like, woo, you look hot. And she's like, I love being spoiled. And then they send her back, still in her gorgeous outfit, with all her shopping bags. And then they're in love.
This is so cruel. This is just so mean. Like, all the other women have just come off of this, like, emotional night of, like, a bunch of, you know, women being sent home, all of this conflict. And then, like, Rachel comes back in, like, huge smile on her face with 20 shopping bags and like a personal footman behind her, like presenting a new gown. Like, it's like, I would be so annoyed if I was in that situation. I would just be like, fuck you. Like, it wouldn't be rational, but I would hate her.
I wouldn't be surprised.
No, I totally get that.
I wouldn't be surprised if they stuffed some of the bags just to make her entrance more enviable.
Oh, totally.
Okay, so I am looking at her old clothes on Instagram.
Payless?
And very cute. She looks great. Rachel's. It's like not Payless. It's really cute, but it's for sure like well-styled Boohoo.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair.
Yeah, that sounds correct.
So maybe it is the first pair of like fancy shoes.
It could definitely
she's
be
wearing.
The first pair of Louboutins, to be fair. I've never worn $400 shoes. I wouldn't say that they were all cheaper than $40 either. You know, it's like there's a lot of
yeah,
in
you're
between.
Like you've it's like you've worn like a solid like $95 pair of heels.
I feel like most women in this position have. Maybe I'm wrong. And if so, Rachel, I apologize.
Rachel has great style. The real investigative journalism we need. Yeah, I think she's super cute. I mean, I guess we can get let's get into the dinner portion because yes. I think we need to like get into some greater context about Rachel off show.
One second, I have a fact check. The shoes retail for $845.
Ah,
$845.
I mean, okay, yeah, that's look. Louboutins are very expensive.
I just want to say
they're so uncomfortable.
Well, this is the thing.
They did not look comfortable.
I've heard of women having, like, operations to fit designer shoes like that on their feet. And I would definitely, like, they would be like, here's some Louboutins. And I'd be like, great. I literally can't wear them. My feet are too wide. But I'm happy. I'm happy for her slender feet. $800. Cool. So they meet for dinner. They're wearing matching, like, midnight blue outfits. And they toast.
I really liked Matt's midnight blue velvet suit. I thought it was snazzy.
Me too. And so he's like, you said you've never been in love. Tell me why. Maybe because she's a young woman and hasn't. It's not really remarkable at this point.
She's like, what, 23? It's not that crazy that she's like not been in love. Like, why does that? Like, maybe she just, like, hasn't met someone to be in love with. It seems like a normal thing.
Yeah. Well, she says, she has an explanation. She says, you know.
Because you must have one.
It's because of me. I often felt undeserving. I think when I met you, I felt like I didn't deserve to be with you. You're out of my league. And he's like, no. And she's like, no, I really do think that. Because I don't have confidence in myself, and that can be projected onto my relationships. And so I have a hard time opening up, and I just need to develop my confidence. And Matt's Look, like, let me help you with that.
All of this is likely true. A lot of people have confidence issues, but there is something so frustrating to me about the fact that, and I think, you know, Zara brought this up during our pod last week, just like the responsibility that especially the women of color on this show seem to have to sort of like mine their trauma and especially their racial trauma to make a connection with Matt, to connect with the audience, you know, watching back home. And then these white women go on these dates and they're like, my biggest trauma is that I should be more confident and know that I do deserve you no matter what. And I am really amazing. But that's just like a thing I have to work on because walls. And they're like, wow, yes, it's very clear why you connect with Matt. That is love. And I'm like, wait, we've learned nothing about her. She's exposed no parts of herself. Like, and I'm not saying that she should have to, but it feels the burden of that feels very unevenly spread out, and that felt really obvious during this date.
It does kind of speak to why we perversely like enjoy those more sometimes exploitative feeling scenes, because we don't learn anything about her. It feels very rote. Right. It's like we asked her, what's your biggest weakness in a job interview, and she's like, I'm a perfectionist. Like, you're not getting anything you can hold on to narratively or personally. It just like, and then he's like, well, I'm crazy about you. Like, I like everything about you. I find everything about you attractive. And
you're
it's
like, what things? What things? Like, we don't know anything about her.
Her only personality trait is being insecure, quote unquote.
Men love that. Well, I know that because of One Direction. It's like, you're insecure. Don't know what for.
But right? Is that where she learned it? Like, we her and I both grew up in the era of One Direction. Is that just like what we've been conditioned to be insecure about?
Here's the funny thing. I feel like I learned from One Direction and previous messaging that existed prior to One Direction that it was like kind of enough to be insecure. But the thing is, you also have to be insanely hot. And I did not.
That's
I was
the
like,
key.
Oh, if you're just insecure, but you're not insanely hot, guys don't care. You know, they're not like, oh, let me help that like normal looking girl with her insecurity. Fortunately, Rachel is like super gorgeous. And so it's very hot to Matt that she is insecure.
Yeah, exactly. It's that really that like just delightful combo right there. I mean, I also feel like now is the time that we probably have to talk about the fact that there is this like growing body of evidence, specifically by like TikTokers and Redditors, about Rachel's her family and her friends and her own history of cultural appropriation and racism, including like some evidence that both of her parents seem to be like MAGA-esque. Her dad donated multiple times to an organization that was created for Trump 2020 and was like saying some kind of offensive things about social safety net and stuff on Facebook. There is a TikTok that maybe we can link to in the show notes that kind of like lays all of this out in a minute. And as it's like some of these things, like one like on one Instagram post, you know, might not feel like a smoking gun, but like all of this put together, it feels like at best she grew up in an incredibly racist community in a family that holds, you know, racist views, supports politicians that hold racist policies. And now she's on TV saying she's in love with the first Black bachelor. And if there had been a lot of growth, like how interesting would it have been to see a conversation, a tough conversation between her and Matt, where she said, like, you know, I grew up in a really white area and an area in which like this community, it's a sunset town, like has this really dark history of racism. And like, I want to be open with you about that. I mean, again, we would never get this on this show, but that's like another level of, again, that burden only falling on women of color rather than like white women who are seeking to marry a Black man, not being asked to confront their history of racist actions, their communities, their families. And that just feels really gross and disappointing. And it feels like it's this cloud that is just over all of Rachel and Matt's interactions.
Yeah. And I think we even see at some point, some early in the season, we saw like a season preview where I think we got a glimpse of them having a conversation about race that was very like old school Bachelor by the book. Like, color doesn't matter, you know, like it's about the person. And I may be misremembering that a little bit, but it struck me at the time. I'm worried that like that is a conversation we'll get and that it will be very shallow and not really grapple with what has been shown to be in her past. And that is, I mean, that's a real problem.
It's not surprising, but it's really disappointing.
Yeah. And this is what, you know, it didn't happen in the same way with Rachel's season, but like you cast someone with this in their past, and like, you know, in Lee's case, it turned out to be that he was just like a racist bully on set. But you also don't want your Black lead to end up with someone who hasn't really grappled with that. She says, you know, I'm falling in love with you. And Matt's like, I feel the same way. And then they kiss. So she's like, I think the first person that he's really said, I'm falling in love with you too at this point.
Yeah, I think so. And they ride off on a romantic carriage ride. She gets the rose. And then it's time for the group date.
Serena P. Serena P, Bree, Katie, Piper, Serena C, Ryan, Michelle, Brittany, Maggie, Abigail, Chelsea, Jesenia, MJ. Love can be messy. This means Kit will be getting on a farm.
Love can be messy on a farm with chickens and mud. God, these like physical challenge dates are just still going.
Yeah, I mean, what else are
these
they
women
do?
Are troopers.
They can't. Nothing, they can't nothing. Do like There's a walking around the foreign city date. They can go. They can do this. I don't think they warned the women that it would be a farm date.
So no, they're wearing like cute date clothes looks. That yeah do not seem to be farm appropriate.
So the big conflict on the date, or like the big narrative of it that we see, is that MJ has decided to like be very intentional about shining through and like stepping to the front. And it seems like the main way that this is happening is that she's like, oh no, I'm afraid of chickens, so that Matt will comfort her. And the other women are like pretty annoyed by this. But I think also there's just general tension brewing. Like, there, Matt's making out with Piper off to the side, like other women can see. Michelle is really struggling. She had this great one-on-one with him, and so she has these intense feelings, and now she's seeing him with other women. So it's not a fun date. I don't know. Would you guys have liked to do this date?
I mean, I personally do get freaked out by chickens, so.
Sounds like you're lying.
Oh, my God.
Sounds fake.
I even grew up working on a farm during the summer because my whole family on my mom's side had farms. And I look back and I'm like, I don't need to go on a group date doing that.
You're like, yeah. I've lived that life.
You just feel like, I'm going to sit on the side over here. I already did the farm stuff in my life. And like, you're just going to have to trust me on that.
I mean, I've like watched my uncle like a chicken. Like,
just... Oh, see, that sounds scary.
No, thank you.
And he would try to get me to like pull the feathers out of it and like cook it for dinner. And like, I just like, I would be the MJ, but like serious about it. Like, no, like I don't want to, the chickens like attack
me. I was
me.
Like, this is the only time that I felt, I think, empathy for MJ during this entire episode was mm-hmm. when she was like running away from the chickens. And like, I too find chickens to be rather frightening. So
I too was attacked by chickens when I was 3 years old, and it's a traumatic memory.
Oh my God. No, that's
I got stuck in a chicken coop. I like went into the chicken coop and I got stuck and no one found me for like probably 10 minutes.
Oh my God.
You could never. So I do feel for MJ.
You could never admit that on The Bachelor. Remember what they did to Annalise with the bumper car trauma?
Oh yeah. There would be like a dramatic reenactment.
They would have to hire like a toddler to like be in a chicken coop, like slow motion.
But then I also know, like, anything else that I would say, they would cut it out and just make my trauma the chicken coop.
Oh, 100%.
And I would just be the chicken coop girl forever.
Yeah, you'd be like crying over like something real, but it would just be like spliced into your description of your traumatic chicken coop experience. And that would be like, and your job title would be something like chicken survivor, like,
which is real. That's like who you really are, and you should. But like, listen, the thing about birds is they have knives pointing out of their face. And I don't think that we should ever belittle anyone's fear of that. That's scary as fuck. So
glad we're all on the same page about this.
So they all head to the night date. Matt starts them off by telling Chelsea he has something for outside. And it's like a little couch by a fire. And she's like, oh, I like you. I'm a little awkward with boys. And he's like, yeah, like, I'm comfortable around you. And she's like, me too. And they make out. So things are going well.
I like her so much. I really like Chelsea.
I too am uncomfortable around boys.
As we all are.
Yeah. Same. Also relatable.
So Abigail also has a pretty vulnerable chat with Matt. I get the sense that Abigail was waiting to have a big conversation with Matt for a one-on-one date and then finally was like, it's not coming. Like, we're halfway through the season. We're getting to the point where I have to have this conversation with him to kind of regrip onto the relationship instead of doing
it. It's really unusual.
It's weird.
The person who got the first impression rose and has been involved in no conflict, like, wouldn't get a one-on-one.
And we don't see him giving her special attention to, like, reassure her for that, which sometimes when you do see someone being brought along kind of late, we'll see conversations with the guy being like, trust me, like, I've got a plan for us or whatever. None of that. She's like, I feel like he's, like, not interested in me anymore, that he hasn't brought me onto a one-on-one yet. So she tells him that she knows he wants a wife and kids, and so does she, but there is a strong possibility that her kids would be deaf. And her birth father walked out on the family when she and her sister got their cochlear implants. So she has this fear that this will be a reason for a partner to leave as well.
I appreciated that she said, she made sure to say very clearly, like, I do not view my hearing loss as baggage. She's like, I have this trauma and I'm outlining it for you, but I'm not categorizing my hearing loss as the thing that is traumatic. It's the shitty response of this other person in my life. Mm-hmm. I really love Abigail, and I hope we get more of her. Like, I'm extremely curious. You know, there are a lot of like really interesting in politics when it comes to cochlear implants. There is like deaf culture is such an interesting, varied thing. And I am just like, there was a New York Times article that I think ran the other week about people within the deaf community, specifically those who have had cochlear implants, being like extremely heartened by seeing Abigail's presence on a mainstream show like The Bachelor. Mm-hmm. And so personally, I'm like hoping we get to see more of her. And I was really glad that we got to know her a little bit better in this conversation.
Love Abigail.
Love her.
Love. I've loved her since the first day. I was like, this is the girl. Like, one of them. She's just,
I think she is still a contender, depending on how far she gets, to be the Bachelorette. I could see it.
I hope. Like, I hope we at least get her. If it's not the next Bachelorette in the future, she's, from what we've seen, so special.
Yeah. And Matt reassures her that he feels the same way. He's like, I admire all this about you. It's not like a roadblock for me. And they kiss. Michelle also has a conversation with him where she's like, I'm having a hard time doing the group date, seeing you with the other women. And he reassures her as well. But now it's time for a more unpleasant conversation because he had not gotten around to talking to MJ. Maybe he was just really tired at the rose ceremony and he's like, it's time. So he sits with MJ.
I've been told you are an antagonist. And this is where MJ does like the white woman thing where she's like, nothing has ever been more hurtful. I cannot believe someone spoke my name. I lead by example. I'm all about peace and harmony, which like anyone who has to clarify that they are all about peace and harmony, like I can't.
Yeah.
Like you're done.
I also, it's really the incredible, it's like you can't call someone anything. Like calling her an antagonist was the most mild, like it's like a literary term. It's a very mild way of being like, I heard that you are being fucking awful. And he's like, yeah. I heard you were, I would say maybe more of an antagonist in the situation. And she's like, oh, that word has been put out there, that famous word antagonist that is used to smear women like myself who lead by example, preaching peace and harmony. And it's unjust. It's unjust that I've been put in this situation and been that word has been used against me. And so Matt is like, yeah, no, sure. Listen, that's what I thought. And like, when I heard that, like, I felt like I needed to tell you just to get off my chest. She's like, sure, of course, you can trust me. So she walks back to the women who are on the couch.
She comes in hot.
She's
like, ladies, there's something Matt said to me. I don't like it. My character was put into question. I was called an antagonist. Can you even believe?
It's a really strong accusation, she says.
She's like, the floor is open. Like, say it to my face. And Jesenia is like, yeah, I mean, Matt literally asked me about what was going on in the house. And I mentioned that you were saying that there was like a varsity and a JV.
Which we actually heard MJ saying at the beginning of this episode.
Multiple times.
And over explicitly the last two to say like the varsity squad should get to talk to Matt first. So we know this is true.
Yes. And Michelle's like, what are you talking about? And I'm just like, oh, nothing. It was just like a joke. Just like, you know, I was just basically saying that the newer women were less than, but like it's just like totally.
She's like, it was just a joke, like new and old, whatever. But like, don't question someone's character. That's hard, you know. Like, just don't do that. And Jesenia makes a really compelling point, which is the character is based on actions and behavior, which MJ seems to have really a lot of trouble processing. Like, character is the thing that she has. And her behavior doesn't reflect on that character and, in fact, should not be mentioned. It's impolite to point out that her behavior is at odds with the character that she believes to have.
And she has the fucking gall to say to all of the women, I lead by example. It's like, your example is shitty.
Like, four times.
Like, if you lead by example, you've been setting a terrible example in which you have, like, repeatedly belittled the newer women in the house.
Someone like, taught her example. The phrase, someone was like, you should lead by example. And she's like, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. She just keeps saying it like it's a mantra.
Blessedly, Abigail does get the group date rose. So we get a brief, you know, respite from the MJ, you know,
bullshit. And I love that Jesenia actually calls out the lead by example thing before the fight wraps up. She's like, that really rubs me the wrong way because you made it uncomfortable for the other women. And that's what you did. And she really is holding the line throughout this in terms of, like, you can say whatever you want about who you are, but what you actually did is something else. And that's what we're talking
about. And she points out that, like, she's like, okay, so did you own up to your actions? And MJ, like, has nothing to say about that. Jesenia keeps making, like, very valid, clear points. And MJ reacts by being like, I'm done here. Like, you went after my character. I feel attacked. I'm a victim. Like, she opened the floor and then was like, I can't because I'm the victim here. Like, I'm being attacked. I'm like, girl, you just asked for feedback. You literally said the floor is open. Ugh, it was.
Love Jesenia.
I was rooting for MJ. It's very disappointing.
Me too.
Early on, she seemed cool. And then she just lost it.
Like the cool, chill girl with like the cool hair.
I was rooting for that
like
hair.
Like easygoing.
Yeah, it's full mask off. Like it's a very ugly side has come out. And I get that, like, what she's actually reaching for are very classic defensive mechanisms when you're like, you know, I'm the real victim here and, like, I'm a good person, so I'm sure I didn't do the bad thing. Like, whatever I did can't be bad by definition because I'm good. But it's damaging. Like, it's perpetuating the bullying to... Again, as we mentioned at the top, textbook, like, deny, attack, and then reverse victim on offender. She's like, I'm actually the victim now. I deny what you said. I'm attacking you, your character, and you're the person who's abusing me. And so that's a ticking time bomb at this point. But first we have Kit's date. Her date card says, dinner at my place.
She only seems to get a night date. It's interesting how they've done a couple of these where it's just like you get a half date, basically.
I wonder how the actual math works because I'm sure that like they get a longer stint in the house than they would if they had like a sit-down dinner. But it's unclear kind of how much.
Yeah, it's unclear. But I mean, I do actually really enjoy when they do these more casual dates. It leaves a little bit more room to like see a couple actually interact and have a conversation. Kit seems very emotional about the fact that it seems to be like a dinner cooking date because she says that like the kitchen is her happy place with her mother,
Cynthia Rowley,
noted fashion designer Cynthia Rowley, and like she has told Matt that is her happy place, and so she thinks like Matt did this for her. Meanwhile, Matt is just like Swiffering his deluxe apartment suite on this resort, which by the way looked gorgeous.
Yeah,
I was like, that kitchen looks amazing, and I would like to stay there.
He'd been cleaning it all day, so of course
all day.
And he has things kind of laid out to make cookies, so they're gonna be baking cookies together. And Kit's also ready to open up a little bit
about all of the gold Bentleys she's had.
A lot of her life is gold Bentleys and red carpets. And honestly, who among us
like,
cannot
Kit, my girl, like if you...
To like, that.
It was just the kind of thing where you're like, are you trying to be relatable? Because like that, saying that is like, not... Like you can say like it's been difficult to be a child of a celebrity and have like... and. You know, I have been forced to be in the public eye and not felt control over that. Like, that would be a thing that would, like, maybe breed some empathy. But when you lead with, my whole life has been gold Bentleys and red carpets, it's just like, what?
I live a life of unimaginable luxury, and that's been very difficult for me. No, she doesn't frame it in the most sympathetic way that she could have. But I guess what she's leading up to is, like, at 21, it's been difficult for her to find love because... she has built up so many walls in order to cope with being in the public eye.
And like, that's it. Look, again, that is actually a real thing. And I can imagine would be difficult to be. I mean, Alexa, you're someone who was like sort of a public figure when you were pretty young. not like in the way of being like the child of a celebrity, but like that's a lot of pressure to put on.
I was kind of trying to explain this to like Batch Chat a couple weeks ago, because like there's always the jab at like, not even jab at influencer, but I feel like it's like this thing that's like really considered to just be like fun and games. And like they were like, let's interview the influencer in the group, and they were like asking questions, and they were like, oh my gosh, it must be so nice to just go on The Bachelor and then you go on Revolve trips. And I was like, well, my journey is a little bit different. Like, I was 16 when I started and like didn't have any guidance through it. So like I watched Kit's thing and I was like, well, I like kind of get it in a lot of ways. Like, my parents weren't celebrities. I wasn't forced into this. It's like, I still didn't really know what I was signing up for going into this. And I was never like famous by any means, but it was weird growing up kind of knowing that like what I was doing wasn't normal. And like even kind of being like maybe adjacent to people that live a life like Kit was weird to see. But it was also kind of weird to see that being like, this is the struggle I've gone through in life.
Right.
Because at the same time, it's like, I've also met people that are like Kit. I have friends that are people like Kit. And like, they genuinely believe it's like the hardest thing in the world, especially within the New York crew. It's like, I do get it, because like, I feel like a lot of people are going to make fun of her for that. But I'm like, that is all she knows. That's her world. And like, she probably is going onto the show, hearing other women explain their experiences, and then almost insecure in the sense that like, she's like, I haven't, you know, gone through these things. My life has been peachy in a lot of ways. But she's somebody that was super interesting to me, so I kind of like dug up some info on her. And it does seem like she struggled with a lot. Like, she was never big or whatever. But she did lose like 20 pounds, which you can tell is like kind of like a product of like having a mom that's a designer and like feeling this pressure. So I kind of have seen that like she probably has gone through like public figure insecurities. It's like, yeah, you know, growing up and like when I moved here to LA when I was like 18, like a manager flew out of the sky and wanted to represent me. And then like an agent told me I had to lose 30 pounds when I was what, 125 pounds. So it's like you hear all that and it's just like, it's scary, but we hear about it like all the time. Like, people share those stories constantly. I by no means was like, I never even considered what I was doing was like being a public figure. It was just like, there's people online that watch me that are a little invasive of my life. And like, I don't know, going through some stuff as like a younger person, especially like 21, like you just don't really know how to handle it. And you realize right. that your experiences aren't normal. And then you feel weird because you're like, I still feel pain and I still feel uncomfortable and I'm still insecure about things. But then it's not as valid when there are people that, you know, have grown up dealing with things that are just so much bigger. And like, it, I'm sure she's like not only like the youngest person there, which is probably something that she's insecure about, but it's also like there's all these women that have really been through heavy, hard things. And like, I don't know Kit's life. No one knows Kit's life. But I can imagine it's probably like challenging in her own way. And it's probably all, she's probably also growing a lot through this process.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, like, that she, you get the sense that she is grappling with a lot of this stuff, and she's still so young. She's looking for, like, a first relationship, and she's on a show where you're supposed to be, like, getting married into your last relationship. And, like, I feel like there's a disconnect there for me that, like, she's still at an age where she's coming to grips with all this stuff, and that could go in a lot of directions. Like, maybe she could process it really well and come out really grounded and cool. Maybe not. Like, she pulls up trying to, like, impress Matt by having a really expensive car. But she's also like, this has been, like, kind of an emotional burden for me. She's not really figured out her relationship to all that stuff yet. And she's looking for a man who will help her process this by getting her in touch with what's valuable about her inside. And I don't know if this is the right place for her to get into a relationship, but maybe she will, like, go through some form of processing and get something out of it. I don't know.
I hope so. She, like, I think you both articulated that perfectly. And that sort of gets at, like, the fundamental tension I think probably lots of viewers felt watching this, of just, like, I don't know exactly how to feel about this, but they do seem to connect. I think Matt and Kit are very physically attracted to each other. And she's like, this is what our life would look like, just making out on kitchen countertops in a Nancy Meyers kitchen, which, like, with Kit, maybe, honestly, literally, maybe it would. It probably would. and she's like, I'm falling for you. And he's like, here's the rose.
Yeah, I think Kit's cool.
I think she has the potential to become cool.
Yeah, there have definitely been like, some points when I haven't liked her at all, and other points where I'm like, so like, I feel like I'm interested to see where she goes from here.
I just like feel like, I don't know, it just like, it, the whole thing makes me kind of sad because I feel like Kit is also like a city 21, which is a kid. Like 21 in the Midwest is like, okay, like start thinking about marriage. So that's why it's hard for me because it's like, I kind of know where I was when I was 21 and I'm like, I couldn't even imagine being in that situation.
Yeah, no.
I couldn't imagine being like sequestered and like just like how you could feel insecure going into that situation. So I'm almost like, I don't know, like I just like kind of feel for her, even though people are probably going to listen to me saying this, like, are you joking? Like there's so many other women that are going through stuff. I just like can look back at my life then and kind of just like empathize with her and understand what she's going through.
No,
but by no means do I think Kit has struggled the most on this show.
I mean, I think
right, yeah,
we're all clear on that. But Matt really digs her, and they have a great date, and she gets the rose. And then the next morning, they're all sort of anticipating the cocktail party and rose ceremony that night when a knock comes on the door, and it is a they seem to be taking a page out of the Tayshia season. There is a note saying, MJ and Jesenia, I need to know the truth. Meet me at the cocktail party before the other women arrive. I kind of love this as an alternative to the two-on-one date instead of just having
me
this
too.
Whole thing where they have to like pretend they're on a date, but actually they're just litigating drama in some remote location.
It's like, just go for the drama. Just go. Just have them come in. Don't waste a date. It's like impromptu two-on-one. I need the two of you to like work this shit out, and then I need to send one or both of you home. Like it's a better format. And so MJ and Jesenia just like get up. Jesenia's like, well, guess I'm gonna go get ready. And MJ, again, just like, you know, she's gonna come in hot.
And she has a lot to say. She's constantly just like, the truth is gonna come out. I have the facts. And it's like, yes, but you didn't even deny what you said when confronted with it. So
also, like, we all have the facts.
We all know the facts.
At one point when they are at the cocktail party, Jesenia even says, like, yeah, I guess the truth will come out when this literally all airs on national television.
Yeah, what do you even say to that? I'm just hoping for a really generous edit. And again, the vibe is very weird. Like, it felt almost noirish to me. Like, we're seeing these two, like, stone-faced women like painting their faces and donning
they
their power outfits.
Very gorgeous.
MJ,
they were like ready for this proverbial battle.
MJ's in like a blazer mini dress and her hair is huge. She's like big hair, big hoops, big energy tonight. Jesenia's in a bright blue jumpsuit. They're not looking at each other on the way over. They're like getting their game faces on. And so MJ has prepared a little monologue. They sit down in the cocktail party area facing each other. And MJ begins to speak. And I will quote here. This is embarrassing. I'm embarrassed to be here. But I'm here because you said my name. You know what I stand for. I preach harmony, peace. You put my character in question with Matt. You put my relationship in jeopardy. Based on an accusation you made about my character, I have never been more hurt in my life. I am furious right now. You should be embarrassed because we are here because of your actions right now. I felt like this lasted for hours. Like, she just kept talking. It's actually only a few sentences, but it was so unpleasant to listen to.
And Jesenia is just, like, cool as a cucumber. She's like, are you done? And MJ says she is. And Jesenia is like, the only reason your name was mentioned is because you did this very specific thing, which is starting the terms JV and varsity. And MJ, again, has nothing to say to this. So she says, well, he'll know the truth by the end of the night. It's like, yes.
Yes.
He will. And the truth is, in fact, very clear. Like, you can say, I don't appreciate you bringing my name into this because I, whatever, was making a what I thought was a joke and didn't realize it was like contributing to toxic culture, like, and you exaggerated my involvement. No, MJ is just like, you're bad. I'm good. I preach peace. And that's the end of it. Like, the whole thing is so delusional.
Yeah. And MJ also does this thing that I really dislike, where she interrupts Jesenia. And then when Jesenia tries to continue talking, she shouts, "Stop talking over me, Jesenia."
And she also interrupts her and says, "You're done. This is done. You continue to tear down other people." I'm like, who did she tear down? The only thing she said was MJ was a bit of an antagonist when she said JV versus varsity. Like, it's a very specific claim.
I actually
think MJ has ballooned this.
MJ could have gotten out of this easier than any of the other women who we've seen confronted. Yes. She could definitely have said, I use the term and I regret it now because it was used in really ugly ways and I never intended that. Is that correct? No, but she could have spun it.
Exactly. She did herself no favors. Instead, she just went on the offensive and attacked Jesenia as being like a person who tears down other women, which I also like deeply, deeply hate when especially white women try to like weaponize like feminist concepts mm-hmm. and language in a way that is totally insincere and in bad faith in order to actually like attack another woman. Like, the whole thing is very twisted. And again, you just can't help but see the racial dynamic at play.
Yeah.
It's gross.
And I mean, it's the very same sort of stuff that we saw going on with like Solidarity is for White Women. Like, the whole idea of like, oh, well, I'm being criticized by these women. They're betraying the sisterhood by criticizing me and making me feel bad and harming my reputation. And so they are the villains of the piece. And that is, you know, it's not an accurate reflection of what's happening. And it's an abusive tactic. And it was really hard to watch, honestly, especially because I did originally like MJ, and she has just mm-hmm. gone so far in a villain direction. Mm-hmm. And it's hard, you know, like, there's editing. I don't know how you could edit the kinds of tactics into being, you know, you see her shouting Jesenia down, you see her, you know, saying, you know, it's your turn to talk, basically, or the floor is open, and then trying to control how long the other person talks. It's a huge display of privilege and like very toxic behavior, for lack of a better word. I don't know. Does anyone else have any thoughts?
I think that kind of sums it up. I mean, look, it ends on a cliffhanger. We know we're going to have to grapple with this same very frustrating conflict next week. I assume MJ is going to go home, and then maybe we can get on with this and see some like actual love stories, because I'm tired.
See some Chelsea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Imagine.
Some she Chelsea, needs to shine. Some Michelle, some like more Brie, Abigail. Like, yes. I need more of these women who have brought the like good connection, good energy. We're far enough in the season that I'm like over the mean girl shit and I want it to end.
And it's not, I mean, we also see in a preview that there's going to be, I'm not looking forward to this, some really nasty conversations coming next week. We see like Katie in a shouting match.
With Serena C, I think.
Serena C, who is one of, I feel like, the women we've seen the most mean girl comments from who has not been explicitly confronted about it.
Yeah.
Like, it just goes a lot deeper in the house than Victoria and Anna, unfortunately. And it's not going to be all wrapped up by next week. But any other takeaways from this episode?
I think we did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we did it. Alexa, thank you so much for journeying through this muck with us. This was really, really fun.
This was
awesome. Please come back. Please come back anytime.
I just want to, yeah, I would love this. I love it. I love it. See, I love that, like, my approach to The Bachelor is just, like, very gossipy. It's, like, the couple of, like, beats I have in the week, because there's nothing going on, where I can, like, dig up research on these, like, fictional characters of real people. And, like, I'm pretty aware of what's going on. I have enough friends that have been on the show where I know that they're, like, stellar human beings that have had really bad cuts. But it's fun to see it, like, super... It's like a very...
Broken down. Yeah,
broken
look.
Down. Yeah, there we go.
I think what we're going for... in our commentary is like these are the messages that are being given to the people who watch this show. Whether or not it's a totally accurate reflection of like the specific individuals, it's like, okay, what are the tropes that we're seeing here? And like, it's a lot of gross shit often. Yeah. And then, you know, look.
And production has really played up, you know, bringing the new women in halfway through. Like, they've had their hands in creating a lot of
the dynamic. They created this conflict. And then, you know, but Alexa, we appreciate it. And I appreciate your gossip. We like it all. We like all of it. I love gossip.
I could sit here and gossip all day.
Same. And now it's time for Feminism Fails, and obviously we had a handful this episode.
Ooh, not a pretty sight this episode. So just let's start off with a light one. The princess date, the whole princess date genre is one that we do not care for. There's the tropes of the woman being like a Cinderella, who is being spoiled by her male benefactor, plays into a lot of gross archetypes of the dependent woman. So I'm going to give that a 2.5, 3. You know, they do it for the men as well sometimes, but I still find the message sent by these dates on The Bachelor to be really gross.
Then we have Victoria calling Ryan a shady bitch, which I think is like pretty self-explanatory. Not good. Don't call other women bitches. And especially in this case, there was like literally nothing that we saw that Ryan had done to warrant any sort of critique or insult from Victoria, except perhaps maybe criticizing Victoria. It's gross. We're going to give that one a 4.
Next, it's another Victoria on her way out. Gave us a few femme fails. This one happened off screen, but it ended up playing such a big role in the episode. Victoria calling Ryan a hoe. As we discussed, there is a really strong gender and racial component to this insult, and it clearly really hurt Ryan for a reason. And I'm going to give that a 5. I just think it's really unacceptable to talk about women that way.
And then a big overarching one, which we discussed a lot during this recap, Victoria and MJ, we sort of saw them turning the tables, trying to play victim when Ryan and Jesenia tell the truth about the hurtful actions that they've taken. And this really played into a theme of toxic white femininity, sort of the weaponization of white women tears, the weaponization of this idea that white women are somehow inherently helpless and inherently victims, and thus immune to any sort of real and just critique, especially by women of color. So we're going to give that one a big ol' 5. And that's it for Here to Make Friends. Thanks to our guest, Alexa Losi, and our producers, Nick Offenberg and Sarah Patterson.
Give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram at Here to Make Friends Pod, and you can follow us individually on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Claire E. Fallon.
And I'm at Emma Lady Rose.
We'll be back next week to recap episode 6. Yes, we're already to episode 6 of Matt James' season of The Bachelor.